Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The Black Box is Michael Connelly's 25th book in 20 years as an author. To mark that anniversary, his latest story stars LAPD detective Harry Bosch and spans two decades. Michael Connelly started his career as a newspaper reporter, eventually working as a police and crime reporter for the Los Angeles Times. While there, he covered the 1992 riots, a time and place to which he returns in The Black Box. The book begins in the spring of 1992 when Los Angeles burned in the aftermath of the acquittal of LAPD officers and the beating of Rodney King. Bosch is called to the scene of the murder of a Danish journalist that in those wild days of rage and violence goes unsolved. 20 years later, he's working cold cases when he returns to that case, one that long had lingered in his memory, and starts to work it again. It's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Connelly to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me on and being interested in this.
It's fascinating to me, of given the 20 years here, and we look at 1992, how did that event of those riots in Los Angeles change you as a writer, as a journalist, as a person?
I think a lot, but nothing it's hard to put your fingers on it. I was a working journalist. I spent the first two nights out, following assignments and so forth, and was somewhat in the middle of it. Had some, searing experiences, came close to being hurt a couple times. And so it's something that stays with you. It also came just a few months after my first novel had been published, and I was in the stage of thinking, do I want to stay with journalism? Do I want to pursue just writing novels, do both? And that was such a big moment in the history of Los Angeles, or at least the history that I was while I was there, that it made me want to stay on as a journalist to keep going for at least a little while longer.
What was there about the lore of the novel that was with you while you were reporting?
I came to it kind of backwards, I guess you'd say. I wanted to write novels when I was about 19. That's when the light bulb went off. I said, I want to write novels, and more specifically, I wanted to write crime novels. And so the question was, well, how do you get there? How do you prepare yourself for that? What do you know about crime novels? What do you know about detectives? It was pretty much only what I knew from reading novels. And so in kind of talking to my parents and huddling up about this idea, I decided to go into journalism as a hopeful means to that end. Also knowing that if that end never happened, it was a pretty interesting job.
And as far as it being an interesting job, and I mentioned this in the introduction, of coming to the crime aspect of it, of that being your beat, what was it about that that lured you? And was it that you were interested in it or good at it or both?
I think it was a little bit – hopefully it was both. What's drawn me, and I'm still fixated all these years later, I said the idea came when I was 19, so we're talking about 37 years later. I'm still fascinated by taking apart crime and writing about it, but not from the aspect of how did they pull this crime off, or how did the bad guy do it, or how did the bad guy get away. More from the standpoint of the detective. I'm just – I guess infinitely interested in what it takes to do that job right, and it's more than a sacrifice of time and education and focus and relentlessness, because there's a price to be paid when your job takes you into the underside of a city, the darkness of humanity, dealing with the very worst kind of people. It takes something out of you, and to keep on doing it and doing it right is I think very unsung and quietly noble, and that's where my fascination lies.
In writing The Black Box, were you aware that it had been 20 years, and is that something that you were conscious of upon the taking on of the project?
Yeah, very much so. Usually I don't. Usually I'm staring at the screen and it's got zero words, and I know I need 100,000 words, and I, start thinking about the stories that I've been carrying around in my pockets. This time I knew I'm about to start writing my 25th novel, and it will be published in my 20th year of being in the industry, and it was astounding to me that I made it this far, that I ever got this opportunity. And so I wanted to at least note it in some way, so I decided on the 20-year story I'd go back to the beginning. So you go back to 1992 and see what can I draw on, and it's pretty clear. You know, as you're ticking through the calendar, you come to the end of April, and it's like the city's on fire, the city's torn apart, and of course that would be a place to start.
What do you remember of that time, of the riots, in the sense that even helped this book starts in 1992, of what helped in the creation of the overall story?
Well, from my own experiences, I saw, you know, the best of humanity, and I saw the worst. I mean, obviously, there was a collective freak out almost of people doing stuff that they normally would not do. You know, it was groupthink, gangthink, people looting for the sake of looting, people burning for the sake of burning. It didn't make a lot of sense. It was very surreal. But at the same time, you know, my own personal experiences, I got in a situation on one night where I was surrounded by angry people and was being pushed around. Somebody in that group came out of the groupthink and decided this is not right and grabbed hold of me and got me to safety. So I had like those kind of experiences, high and low. And I think it rounded out my view of the city, of what happened that day. And that, of course, I think would transfer over into any kind of writing about it. This isn't the first time I've written about it. This is the biggest way I've written about it. But in several books beforehand, I've touched on the riots and what that's meant to the recent history of Los Angeles.
I was going to ask you about that because it seems to – the tentacles are long, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the you go through an experience of that either personally or as a city, it's going to affect, you know. And, you know, I write crime novels. There's a puzzle in this book. Who did it? And that's the entertainment of it. But hopefully this book and other books before it that I've written, at least from time to time, hold up a little bit of a mirror, you know, to society or to the city, and ask a question in the reader's mind. And this one, I think the prevalent question is, where have we come in 20 years? Could this happen again? We were all certainly taken by surprise 20 years ago. Could we be surprised again?
It seems as though in reading the novel and having this discussion that yeah, it could happen again, and anything's possible, isn't it?
Well, of course, anything's possible. But you can also look at what was happening in 92 and you can see it in 2012. Of course, we don't have the overarching Rodney King case that was certainly a lightning rod type of situation in the city. But to me, that was just a match that set the kindling on fire. The kindling's still there because it was mostly not about any kind of racial animosity. It was about opportunity, economic opportunity. It was not there in Los Angeles in 1992, so it was quite easy to tip what seemed to be a social injustice into flames and looting and anger. So hopefully we don't have that match now, but we certainly still have the lack of economic opportunity, especially for young people. In parts of the community, almost all parts of the community.
Michael Connelly is our guest. The new novel is The Black Box. It is published by Little Brown. Let us talk about the character of Harry Bosch, who has been part of 20 of those 25 novels. Did you know from the beginning that this was going to be a character that you wanted to work with for a while? Was that the idea?
I came to crime fiction loving to read serials, ongoing characters. But when, you know, you haven't published a book and you're writing this character, all you can do is hope. You know, I certainly planted seeds in the first book that I could explore later. The fact that, you know, we're 20 years later and Harry Bosch is still active, I couldn't have foreseen that. It's beyond anything I actually imagined. But, yeah, it started with the hope that I would get a chance to explore the character at least a few times.
What do you think there is about the character that has resonated with readers, that crime readers and general readers like this guy?
I think there's a couple of, like, baseline things about him that everyone can connect to, that they can read these books and almost surreptitiously nod their head because they're in agreement. I think one is his relentlessness. The guy just doesn't give up. And whether we have that in our life, in whatever aspect, we would hope to have it. I hope I'm relentless about some things, and I think all readers are. The other one is his basic code of fairness. You know, he believes that everybody counts or nobody counts. And that's a pretty idealistic thing that he tries to stick to. And I'm not even saying he's able to stick to it through all these books, but he tries. And I think, you know, when you get down to it, basic fairness is something that connects to many people.
In that basic fairness and looking at this character, how similar is he to the cop that you would work with as a journalist in Los Angeles?
Well, he's certainly drawn from a lot of cops I've known. I keep talking about how lucky I am. I've been doing this for 20 years. And so the first stage of the series was certainly based on working cops I knew as a working journalist. I covered crime. I was talking to dozens of detectives a day, and not everything I knew about them or saw about them ends up in a newspaper story. So there's a lot of stuff that I carried with me and held, you know, for my books. I then retired from journalism and became just a full-time novelist, and I maintained some contacts and added some new contacts. And so in the latter half of the series, you know, maybe the last 8 to 10 books, I've been dealing with a much smaller group. And so I see aspects of Harry Bosch drawn from 2 or 3 detectives I know specifically.
You don't live in Los Angeles anymore. Does that make a difference?
I don't know. It makes a difference, obviously, in the writing, because I was very, I guess you would say, journalistic or reportorial about the way I would write when I lived there. You know, I would go do an interview or I'd go to a spot and I'd write that section that night. Now it's not like that. I spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, do a lot of research, meet with a lot of people. But for the most part, when I'm writing about Los Angeles, I'm 3,000 miles away in Florida where I live now. And so it's created a different, I guess, muscle group for me for creating these stories. And so it is different. I've written, I believe, the last 10 novels of mine not living in Los Angeles. And if you ask me, I think they're a more accurate assessment of Los Angeles because there's something about that distance of writing and looking at it from afar.
What is there about the city that is so fascinating to people? It has that glitz, and yet it is very different and very gritty of what we read in the novels.
That's the answer. There's glitz and grit, you know, and it's a place, it's a destination city. People go there. Most of the people you know there are from somewhere else. And I know there's other cities like that. New York might be like that, for example. South Florida is certainly like that. It's full of people who have come from somewhere else to make it, because wherever they were from, they weren't making it. And so it has this built-in hope to it, and it also has this built-in, almost visual difference between the haves and have-nots, those who came to attain their dream and have made it, and those who haven't. That kind of creates a friction that is, I think, the anchor point of pretty good fiction, and whether that fiction is television, movies, or books, or whatever. And I think that's one thing that draws people to it.
Harry Bosch is going to enter the realm of television?
I hope so. You know, it's we're just talking about L.A., Hollywood. It's the big if. Harry has been on the shelf for more than a decade, and I finally got him back. And what was good about that is during that decade, more books were written about Harry Bosch, and there's a lot of material. So when I got control of the character back, it just became a no-brainer to me that, you know, do you want to try to cover this guy and what we know about him in a 2-hour movie, or do you want to try a longer form, that it would be television, hopefully over multiple episodes and multiple seasons. And so that's the direction I'm taking it. And I've made some partnerships and kind of created an effort that has, I think, a good production company and a really good television showrunner / writer. And we'll probably know in the next month or two whether Harry has a shot.
How much of that do you want to be a part of? Or do you want to be involved and hold on to that character? Or, as Robert B. Parker once described to me, that he learned painfully in the process that you just take the money and run.
Well, I agree with him that it is a painful process, and we all learn from it. What I learned from it was, I used to be that I wanted to write everything. You know, if this is based on my character, then I want to write it. And I you know, as Clint Eastwood said, a man has to know his limitations. I want to be the best book writer I can be, and that's what I got to concentrate on. But Harry Bosch has been with me for 20 years, so I'm very protective of him, and I want to make sure that, you know, the integrity of the series is captured in any kind of television series. So I'm involved in terms of approvals and decision-making that will set up the series, but it's unlikely I'll ever be a writer on the show or joining that part of it. It's more like, you know, like in my deal, I made sure it was in the contract that it has to be shot in L.A. Harry Bosch and L.A. are together. They're one. And so you can't shoot it in Vancouver or, you know, New Orleans and try to make it look like L.A. If you want to make a story about Harry Bosch in L.A., it's got to be shot in L.A. So those are the type of controls that I'm hopefully going to have over anything that would come to pass.
The other project you're working on is Sound of Redemption, which is a documentary film, the subtitle being The Frank Morgan Project. You're an executive producer of the film. How did that come about?
Well, Frank Morgan is a saxophonist who passed away a few years ago. He has a pretty amazing story of failure and redemption. He was the protege of Charlie Bird Parker. His first album came out in the early 50s. And then soon he went down a path of drugs and crime to support drug habits. And then next thing you know, he spends 28 of the next 35 years in prison. He came back from that and created and recorded some of the best jazz music of the last quarter century. There's 35 years between his first and second album. And he came out, he didn't blame anyone. He was a gentle soul with a really good message about not following the path that he was on. I got to know him a little bit. He's Harry Bosch's favorite musician, mentioned a lot in the books. You know, after he passed away, it just seemed like this is a story that I think could be inspiring for people, whether they're into jazz or not.
Music is mentioned a lot in the books. Mm-hmm. Is that a conscious effort and a result of even your writing process?
Yes. I think, you know, what you're endeavoring to do in every book is deliver character to the reader. And you got to find any way you can to brush on strokes of character. And so a baseline thing I believe in is give each major character you're writing about a musical identity. And so with Harry Bosch, for example, it's been jazz. And so that required a certain kind of research and finding the kind of music that Harry would listen to. It's weird. In a book, you can't hear the music. You can describe it, but doesn't come close to actually hearing it. So you really kind of shift to what the music does for the individual in the story and what they get from it. And from that, you can start, you know, delivering character to the reader. So it is important. And as I say, I give each character a musical identity, and so more often than not, I'm listening to that music when I'm writing that character. So, you know, Harry Bosch, I'm listening to jazz. Mickey Haller, the lawyer, I'm listening more to blues and rock and roll. And that's, you know, how I've chosen to try to delineate these characters. But, you know, if you're reading a Harry Bosch book and it mentions, you know, Art Pepper on this page and the song Patricia, for example, taking a one from the new book. Well, mm-hmm. That's what I was listening to when I wrote that page. That's how it goes.
Do you put it on intentionally or does it come on in a mix?
It usually comes on a mix. Art, for example, in this book, Art Pepper is pretty prevalent through it because in it he gets a gift from his daughter of these five discs of Art Pepper playing live at different places in the world. That mirrors someone having given – actually it was Art Pepper's widow – gave me those discs to listen to. And so I started listening to them as I was writing this book, and they found their way in.
Looking at the 20 years, obviously 20 years allows you to reflect, but it also lets you look forward as well. Is there anything that you still want to accomplish, that you want to change?
Well, I feel like I've been given an amazing opportunity with Harry Bosch, you know, not foreseeing that he would last this long. It's now been, if you add it all up, more than 2 million words about this character. And so the further this has gone, the more sacred that opportunity has gotten to me. And so it's really about safeguarding that and bringing it eventually, as I will eventually have to stop writings at some point in my life, but bringing it forward with me, taking care of it, and bringing it to some kind of fulfilling conclusion that's fitting of all the books before it.
You mentioned Mickey Haller, obviously a a very interesting character as well, a character I assume you want to continue.
Mickey Haller's a good counterpoint to Harry Bosch, and, you know, that's why they're half-brothers, kind of flip side of each other, especially in the justice system, their positions in the justice system. Mostly what I'm about as a writer is Harry Bosch. He's the guy who's going to stand for me, but I can't write about him all the time. I think that's dangerous. It's dangerous of you can grow tired, the series can go static. And so really just by instinct, I decided various times to write about someone else. And Mickey Haller is a great one to go to. Is, you know, I think in terms of looking at a blank screen and knowing I got to, in the next 10 months, write about 100,000 words. Who do I want to do it with? Who do I want to spend that time with? Harry's a no-brainer. I can always spend that time with him. But when it's time to give him a break, it's very easy to look at Mickey Haller and say, yeah, I could do the next 10 months writing about him.
Is that kind of the cracker between the wine tastings in the sense that, you know, it clears the palate and lets you do something else?
In a way, it is. I mean, because usually, like I say, it's just instinctive. You think, I need to take some time off from Harry. But then I realize, as I'm writing another book, I didn't really need to take that much time off. And so by the time I'm done writing a book like The Poet or Lincoln Lawyer, I'm so charged up and I can't wait to get back to Harry Bosch. It really has served a good purpose.
Obviously, you're in the promotion phase, and that is put in the schedule at some point. Do you enjoy that process of doing the events, of going to meet the readers, and what do you find out from that?
I do, and I guess there's a contradiction in that possibly, because you would think that, you know, the words on the page, the book, should stand for what you've done, and that you shouldn't have to answer questions or offer additional information so people would get it. But I can't help it. I mean, it's an introvert's life. You know, I go in a room by myself and write a book for about 10 months. So 1 month a year, I'm a public person, and it's a good relief. And on top of that, you know, there's much to be gained, I think, by talking or communicating with people who are reading your books and hopefully liking them, seeing what they're getting out of it, and is that what you intended? It's a good experience. The travel is wearying, but once you step into a bookstore or have a conversation like this, it's all good.
It fascinates me how rabid fans are of this particular genre. Talk to a lot of writers that write a lot of different subjects, but there's something about the reader of crime fiction that seems to be, and I guess the same could be said for science fiction as well, but they are very keen and quite frankly, not jaded exactly, but certainly experienced.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like selling cars where you get one a year or one every 3 years. Generally, what I've found is people, and it comes from myself, I'm a voracious reader of crime fiction. So it's likely that most of the people who are consuming my books are also voracious. And so they read across, and most of them know the secret, that there's more to these stories than just who did it. You know, there's good character studies. There's good social reflection. So there's many different touch points of fulfillment to be had in these books. And so in a way, I think it's no wonder that so many people are keen on reading these books and staying with them.
So the obvious question, the people listening are saying, who does Michael Connelly read?
Well, I try to read all over the place. I mean, there's some great masters at work here. I'll throw out James Lee Burke. I mean, he's a writer that, you know, I continually learn from as I read his books. There's people who are, I think, pretty fearless writers in terms of not staying with the same old. You know, people like Dennis Lehane, who you really don't know from book to book what he's going to explore, even though it could generally be under the umbrella of crime fiction. I like a lot of writers from overseas because it's more escape from me, because there's just a little bit different. People like Denise Mina, I love, Ian Rankin, then down South Africa, Dion Mayer, great writer. So I'm always looking all around. You know, you find inspiration where you least expect it, so I'm always keeping an eye out for somebody new.
Michael Connelly's new book is The Black Box. It is published by Little Brown. Michael Connelly, thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations on the 20 years and the new novel as well. Great pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. This edition was recorded at Argo Studios in New York City. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening.
for the book show. I'm Joe Donahue.